Around Comics, Episode 14.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Around Comics, where every week we assemble a new panel to discuss topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman. I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Greetings, everyone.
Our first guest on the panel is a longtime friend of the show. He is the artist of Scar Tissue. He is Dave Wachter.
Thanks for having me.
And our next guest is another longtime contributor. He can tell you everything you need to know about Flash and then do your taxes. He is Tom Caters.
Hello, I'm using a Radio Shack microphone.
Thank you, Tom. Gentlemen, welcome to the show, and thank you for being on Around Comics. Our topic this week is a very good one, I believe. We are taking a headline ripped from the pages of Wired Wire Comics News, and everyone here agreed that it deserved its own segment. Today we are talking about product placement in comic books. To give everyone a little background and get them up to speed, we're going to move over to the news desk and cue up our new segment.
This is an Around Comics special report. This story was originally reported in the Wall Street Journal by Brian Steinberg. Superheroes like Superman and Spider-Man can save mankind from natural disasters, space aliens, and evil mutants, but there's one thing they are powerless to stop. Advertisers shilling products within the pages of the comic books they call home. Over the past few months, Marvel Entertainment has begun putting the swoosh logo from Nike in the scenes of some of its titles, such as New X-Men. So far, the emblem has appeared on a car door and on a character's t-shirt. Last week, Daimler Chrysler finalized an ad pack that will include product placements in Marvel Comics. Marvel titles will feature Dodge's new car, the Caliber, in the book's cityscapes, including on billboards, t-shirts, or signs over the next 4 to 8 months. Both Pontiac and Dodge are getting the product placement deals as part of a larger ad buy. The two car companies are purchasing print ads as well, and it's the first time either automaker has taken out an ad in a comic book. Product placement has become commonplace in movies and TV shows. Now it's coming to comic books, in part because the industry's two giants, DC and Marvel, are promoting some of their titles as places to reach one of Madison Avenue's most elusive audiences. Guys in their 20s. Notoriously hard to reach, young adult males are known to be wary of traditional sales pitches, especially ones that get in the way of their entertainment. Lately, readers of comic books have gotten older. On Madison Avenue, there is a large misunderstanding of who is reading these titles and what they are paying attention to. The genre suffered a slump beginning in the early 1990s that lasted until the first Spider-Man movie was released in 2002. In that time, fans who kept buying the books have grown older, now reaching into their 20s, 30s, and early 40s. The recent wave of hit films featuring comic book heroes has gotten consumers, including older ones, interested in comic books again. Estimates place the comic book market at a worth of about $400 to $450 million, with Marvel controlling about 37% and DC capturing around 33%. Weaving products into comics is not entirely new. DC says that in the 1960s, it produced comic book series based on toys such as Captain Action or Hot Wheels in response to advertiser relationships. The new automakers' ads will be less overt.
All right, there you have it, folks. Ads are not only in comics, but now ads are in comics. Placement in comics is what we're talking about today. Before we get to some of the obvious concerns about having logos, ads, billboards, etc. from advertisers in comics, I do want to touch on some of the positives of placement in comics. I'm going to start out with Tom. Do you see any positives from ad placement?
Well, I think if there's any positive, it's that it's a way for them to make money, which is, I guess, a positive for them, and it's a business. So, I mean, that's important. They're not running charities for our benefit, for us to to get comic books because we're addicted to them. But, I mean, that's one benefit. It's another revenue stream for an industry that's having problems finding new revenue streams.
I agree with that. We'll move over to Dave Wachter. Do you have any positives in product placement?
I know some of the positives that I've heard, so I can't say that I agree with them all, but one of them is like what Tom mentioned, and I can see that, so that you're helping keep this business alive and thriving, which is what we all want. I've also heard the idea that this will either lower, I don't believe at all, or hold prices where they are, that they do not go up faster. Now, this is an argument I've heard. I'm not advocating it.
I don't think anyone believes that.
No, I don't think so either. But that's one of the arguments. Another argument is that in a time when a lot of the art is trying to be more realistic, that we live in a world where there are ads everywhere, where people wear logos on their T-shirts and there's billboards everywhere. So having these things around presents a more realistic picture of the world that there would be reflecting through the art now.
Sure. Sal, how about you? Any positive?
Oh, I don't know if I can find many positives beyond what's already been talked about. I think, in one way, maybe it could be beneficial to fans, is that it could possibly lead to a wider acceptance and understanding of the medium, and that in turn could, to lead to other things. If Madison Avenue is now looking at comic books as a viable place to put advertising of, cars and iPods or whatever else, it will hopefully lead to, like I said, a wider acceptance of the medium and a better understanding of the people that read it and its maybe power.
Absolutely. I see one positive, and that is, we're talking about it. We pulled this story out of the Wall Street Journal. Comic books don't get reported in the Wall Street Journal very often, or really any other major media outlets for that matter. If this story is big enough that it's going to put a spotlight on the medium, any news is good news. Any publicity is good news whenever it comes to comic books, in my opinion. So that is a definite positive that I see. Where this goes, we'll see. I think it's going to be a wait and see from the comic book fan perspective, but I think it's just that. Dave, you are a comic book artist. The next thing I wanted to touch on was the advertiser, editor, artist relationship. Now that editors are going to be approached by the upper brass to insert product placements into comics, then the editors are going to have to talk to their writers and their artists. How do you, as an artist, feel about an editor coming to you and saying, on page 22, panel 3, I see a place where we can put a product placement, and I want you to draw this in? How do you feel about that?
Part of me hates the idea completely, but a new part of me that comes from me getting a little older says that this is a realistic thing that's going to be happening. You've already got, artists like to say, yeah, we're artists, we're doing things for art's sake, but when you get into comic books, it really is a form of commercial art, and you're already making certain changes based on that. I mean, you go into it making changes to your style, even so subliminally. But a real problem I have with that is that these ads are now affecting content, and that affects what I would be doing. And I think it's one thing to have an editor approach you about the way the story is being told, and for a story reason, or maybe an idea that's in it will better enlighten the reader to what the character is, or something like that. And that's the editor's job. And when they start coming in and they've got somebody behind them now, the marketing person saying, well, we need to get this many ad placements in there. Now the editor basically has a new job. And now he's taking that down to the artist. And I think not all artists are going to have a problem. A lot of them know that this is a business and that they have to draw basically what they're being told to draw, especially if they want to work. You know, it's so hard to get in the business. By the time you finally get there, you're almost ready to draw anything.
Yeah.
So I think a lot are going to be fine with it. I personally, it would sting a little. I wouldn't, you know, but would I turn down a nice paying gig with one of these big companies because of that? That would be ridiculous.
Well, you know, I look at a comic like Daredevil, which is a pretty good seller, you know, but there are issues in Daredevil where you're looking at 22 pages of courtroom scene. Now, I can imagine an editor going to Brian Michael Bendis, you know, at the time, or now Ed Brubaker, and saying, you know, we need at some point in the story to get out of the courtroom so we can get outside and see a billboard or see a car passing on the street. Hmm. Sal, what do you think the reaction of writers is going to be when editors start coming to them and saying, you need to change some of the content of your story to fit in some product placement?
Well, that's going to be, you know, the issue is how far are these companies willing to go to whore themselves out and whore these products out where they're changing the basic, you know, story structure or adding scenes or, you know, whatever it is they need to do to try and get more revenue. You know, you have a very large base of good creators that are signed to exclusives to both DC and Marvel. And is that going to be something that in the future these people are going to look at and go, you know what, I'm just tired of having to draw Coca-Cola cans, or I'm tired of having to write scenes where everyone's wearing a certain t-shirt or they're driving a certain car. I think it, in that sense, it can be detrimental in the long run, because as we all know, these are creative people. These are artists that are working in a medium that they love, and as you start to, you know, degrade that, there's only so much people will put up with. Certainly, you know, for security, for financial reasons, I think you can do so much, but if it gets to the point where, and depending on the writer, I mean, can you imagine, you know, an editor at Marvel telling Warren Ellis that he has to change his story because they need to put a billboard up?
Ellis would break a whiskey bottle over his head.
That's what I mean. So I think at some point, depending on who it's going to be or who it might be, or you're going to have issues that could arise depending on how far they want to push it.
Well, I'm going to move on here for a second. The types of comics that are going to have product placements in there, everyone on this panel, I know, buys mainstream comics, but for the majority of us, I think that we all dig a little bit beyond the top sellers, and we all buy indie books, we all buy a lot of the second tier books, you know, the Captain Americas, the Daredevils, not, you know, we don't necessarily all buy, you know, Uncanny X-Men, not yet, before Brubaker. I see a lot of the product placements being in the higher selling books. Those are the ones that are going to appeal to Daimler Chrysler or Coke or Nike. Tom, as a fan that reads a lot of stuff, knowing that it's only probably going to get into a handful of the books that you read, does it bother you?
Well, I think there's absolutely no way it won't work its way into all the books in Marvel eventually. Because if they've just discovered now that people in their 20s enjoy reading comic books, it's only going to be a matter of time before marketers start to pick out even smaller niche groups within those larger groups, saying, well, this is the type of person that reads these types of stories. You know, here's an opportunity for you to advertise this. I mean, I think you'll definitely, it'll only be in the top selling books, but I have a hard time believing that they won't start doing it with all of them. Because, I mean, to Marvel or DC or whoever it is, I mean, they've already crossed, you know, the Rubicon. They've already gone that far. I don't think they'll have any problem being like, well, if you want to put something in Daredevil? All right, you can put in Daredevil. I mean, it's, people making these deals aren't Daredevil fans.
they're going to look at numbers of copies sold.
Yeah.
I can't wait for them to look at good numbers on, like, Green Lantern Corps and say, oh, we need to get, you know, some Starbucks in there.
Yeah. Starbucks in outer space.
Also remember, though, that this isn't going to be like a direct marketing campaign as much as it's a branding awareness. And, you know, can you really imagine some, you know, marketing intern sitting, you know, in an office somewhere flipping through every Marvel and DC comic every month to see where their ads are placed and how it's being used? I mean, they're going to look at numbers.
I want that job. I want to be that guy.
But they're going to look at the numbers. They're going to look at the top-selling books, and they're going to try and figure out in some way to capitalize on that. And then they're just going to stick, you know, whatever product placement they can in there. Personally, I think it's a fad. I don't think it'll last. I don't think that in 10 years you're going to see much of it. I think it'll be in a small blip on the radar.
Oh, I think you're wrong. I think it's here to stay.
These advertisers, they always, you know, the marketing companies, the advertising companies, they oversaturate. You know, they come in, they come up with a new idea. I was thinking about television the other day. You watch your television, and I remember a few years ago when you started seeing the logo emblem faded in the corner of the network, right? And they're like, ooh, they got a new way to advertise it. And then suddenly you got these little ads popping up, and now you've got full motion, takes up the bottom third of the screen, ads, people dancing around, sound effects during the show.
Yeah.
I mean, they will come in with a little idea. They'll break in, just test the waters. If they think it works, then they're going to completely fill the pool.
Well, you know, this is what's interesting. Sal and I both work in marketing to a degree, and you know, you talk about advertising companies and marketing companies. There are actually product placement companies. These companies are out there; they exist in TV and movies. These companies are sources for the people that work on the sets of these productions. If they need a treadmill, you know, Sal and I both work in fitness. If they need a treadmill, they call one of these product placement companies and say, hey, I need a treadmill on the set of Boston Legal. Can you send one over to me? And they'll send it over. Now, these product placement companies, they approach different companies and say, hey, we provide products to XXX and X studios for an ungodly amount of money. We will put your products in our warehouses and guarantee a certain number of placements. Now, with comic books, you don't have to actually supply a product. All you got to do is draw it in. So, you know, that is interesting.
Now that you've listened to the podcast, head to the forum section of AroundComics.com to post your thoughts on the show and talk with other comic fans from around the globe.
Now, on the side of movies and in TV, Sal, do you feel like product placement has cheapened your experience in movies and TV?
Well, you know, quite honestly, most of the time, I'm not paying much attention to it. I think that generally, if I notice it, it's because it's not done very well. And it, you know, this sort of advertising should be where it's almost subconscious. You're not really noticing that they're putting this information out there for you to see. There are times where I feel that it's been done that it didn't necessarily cheapen an experience, but it sort of is a slap in the face sometimes that you realize you may care about something more so than the people that own it. And I think this is sort of the case, and we see it a lot in comics, of that, unfortunately, as fans, we have a deeper connection with these characters and these titles than the people that own them and create them. Well, not necessarily create them, but the people that sell them.
You know, I agree. Whenever you see in a movie or TV, whenever the person holding the Pepsi can is holding it very awkward, you can tell it's to get that can to face the camera, or the way that they're sitting on the desk, they're contorted to make sure that they're showing a logo on a T-shirt. And that's whenever it becomes painfully obvious to me. In comic books, I think it will be, you know, very much the same. So it's going to be, a lot of it's going to depend on who the artist is, who the editor is, and how much they want to push it. Dave, kind of getting back to the realism of it and a positive on product placement, if someone has a shirt that has a swoosh on it, but not the swoosh, and it's a, it was on one of the forums, someone said, you know, I'd rather see a Nike swoosh than a Psyche noosh. You know, realism, I mean, does that help for you?
It doesn't for me. One of the main reasons is I actually think that, I heard this argument and I was thinking about it, that I actually think that when you put real products into a comic book, it hurts the realism. Because, you know, especially with a lot of those type of stories these are going into, one of the main features is escapism, is really the function of these comics. And you really want to be submerged into what the reality of that story is. And that reality is separate from our reality. And you want to be immersed into it, and you don't want to be reminded all of a sudden, here's an ad, and they stick out like a sore thumb. I mean, I saw that example they had up in the newspaper on the T-shirt, and it was just like glowing.
Yeah, but what if it's done well? If someone is, you know, if Spider-Man is swinging through Times Square, and you see a Coca-Cola banner across one of the signs, but it's, it mixes in with the art, it looks like it should belong there, is that going to be better than like a Nozzle Cola?
Well, I kind of miss, but Tom and I were talking about this, we kind of miss the old fake products. Like, this will be lost. This is a like an aspect that artists bring to it, and they put a little bit of their personality in that panel when they put, because they can put some sort of product, and depending on what they call it, sort of make it rhyme with a real product, they can actually be making a commentary on that product.
Or on Big Belly Burger.
Yeah. And you know, so they're getting another idea in. And it's like just one of those cool little things that they get a chance to do, that when you put real products in, you're going to lose that completely. And I always kind of like that, because that's part of the world of the comic book. It's not our world.
You bring up a good point. It was when you said that, it brought up, I was just reading a book by Lawrence Block, who is a science fiction, a crime novelist, and it was a book about writing, and he was talking about how he'll be reading, you know, when people write fiction but based in reality. And he remembers reading a story by someone, and it was this great story, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of it, there was, like, real events, the things that he knows happened, and it completely took him out of the story, and almost ruined it for him, because, you know, that suspension of disbelief is there, and, you know, it doesn't take very much to, you know, turn that off. And I think I understand what Dave was saying, is that, you know, you're immersed in this world that you know is based on your reality, but it isn't. You know, the world of the X-Men is not our world, but there is a certain amount of realism to it. But if all of a sudden you start introducing, you know, it's like if you're reading a comic about, you know, the presidency, and you see George Bush drawn as the president, it does almost take you out of that story, or at least for me, because you don't expect to see a real character in a fantasy story.
I always like it whenever the president is an unrecognizable character.
It's shadow.
It is kind of jarring whenever it's the president, and it also dates it, and that's probably another point. Do you feel like product placement is going to further date comics? Tom?
No. you know why? Because I think the biggest problem I see with it is that, and this is going to be me whining about culture as well, is we've gotten to the point now where Nike and Coca-Cola and McDonald's and all these things are ideas now that are bigger than just shoes and soda and food. They're like their lifestyle. They're selling you a lifestyle that's attached to these things. So I would never worry about dating, because Nike doesn't really mean shoes all that much anymore to anyone. And the shoes is one of the things that gets sold with Nike, which I also think is one of the more nefarious parts of product placement, is sort of the sort of over, you know, saturation of what, you know, Coca-Cola, Nike, all their advertising is content. So, I mean, dating to me isn't part of it, because I can't imagine Coca-Cola not being around, or it's not being
well, around. And yeah. And that's taking product placement.
Yeah.
You know, to you know, that's what they do it.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of money on that. They spend a lot of money on advertising, but they are very concerned, and don't think for a second that they're not. They are very concerned with making sure that their product is part of pop culture. And
yeah. No, the Nike swoosh is as iconic as, you know, the bat signal.
Just do it.
Yeah.
It's just as much part. I mean, people won't forget that. Well, I mean, it's, and that's part of, I think, well, my biggest problem with it is that people say you put a Nike swoosh on it, it's not that big of a deal because you would just have a fake one on there. And I'm like thinking, no, because you see a Nike swoosh and that is content right there. These companies do such a good job of making their advertising more than just like in the old days back in the 50s where you'd see like a billboard saying buy this shaving cream. Like they sell an idea bigger than the product that they, you know, sell. So I would recommend to anyone reading No Logo, if no one's ever read that book, because they talk a lot about that. And I've been thinking a lot about that, about this topic.
Well, here's a question. Okay, now, in comics, definitely in the last few years, people have really taken note of the sheer volume of ads in books. I mean, it's disruptive whenever you are reading a book and you get to this climactic moment and you flip the page expecting the big payoff and there's like WWE action figures and you're like, oh, God, and you flip the page.
Gorilla Monsoon!
And it's, what if through product placement they cut the ads down by 2 or 3 an issue?
They're not going to do that.
No, I know they're not going
to
do that.
And the prices aren't going down. They'll go up, just like everything else, because you know they're not looking out for our well-being. They're looking to put money in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And they're perfectly happy to ruin a medium. I mean, and people, the reason they have to keep finding different inroads to advertise to us is because they just completely use up everything else, just like, you know, somebody with allergies uses up a Kleenex brand tissue. But it is like that. I can't listen to commercial radio anymore, and a lot of people can't, and they go away from it because of the commercials.
They listen to podcasts instead.
Yeah, exactly. Where there aren't commercials, or they TiVo.
Yeah, we got our first commercial in this episode.
Oh, nice. You know, but people are running away from these things now because they really just they push it on you. And it's like a virus, and it just keeps spreading. And if they totally fill up an area where the people finally revolt, then they have to find another way in.
Well, but you're paying for it either way. I mean, if you're not listening to commercial radio, you're, you know, getting XM or Sirius, and you're paying a monthly subscription. It's like cable television. So are we going to see in the future, you know, non-ad comic books at a premium?
So?
I mean, you already have trades, so are trades now going to have that pulled out of it and be sold at a premium?
If they start reprinting ads and trades, I'm done.
Product placement everywhere and trades.
Yeah. Well, this is something that was really interesting. Dave and I were talking before the show. What were you saying about the product placement? How they're setting this up from an art standpoint?
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but this is something I guess I read on the forum. I think Matt may have said it. Is that for every printing they can just say they tell an artist to leave a blank space here, leave a blank space there. We'll put the ads in later. You just leave the empty T-shirt or the empty billboard or the television that's on. Then they put the ads in, and for the second printing of the book, it can be different ads. And then when you go to trade, they can put different ads in, and it can keep switching. They can just juggle it around for whoever decides. Somebody else decides to pay a little bit more, or someone else wants to pull their ads, the next printing will put different advertising.
God, can you imagine that in a book like, you know, V for Vendetta, that 20 years ago, they'd have like, you know, a kangaroos billboard, and now in like the, you know, 57th printing or whatever, they've got a Nike billboard. Yeah. Yeah, Alan Moore, I can already, you know, hear the blood running out of his ears.
He's pounding on your door right now.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the day when they go back to reprint Silver Age stuff and they decide to include product placement in it, you know.
Oh, God.
Barry Allen can be wearing, you know, new Nike running shoes, some retro ads from the... I mean, because I know that just sounded really silly and I just thought that, but
Yeah, you know what?
Thanks, Tom. You just, you know, some marketing idiot somewhere is going to pick that up, and you're going to, you know, it's all your fault.
Edit.
Yeah, edit this out.
Yeah, well, but they're out of ideas, I think, most of these ad guys. So as soon as a new one comes along, they just use it up.
Well, you know, it said it in the Wall Street story. The market that they're going after are guys in their 20s. You know, I'm not a part of that anymore.
Yeah.
But
well, they see women in their 20s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they're saying is that... thanks, Tom. what they're saying is that guys in their 20s are smarter than your average consumer when it comes to advertising. We as a culture have grown up in it, and you know you can smell an ad like a fart in a car, and they have to find new and subversive ways to market and brand to that age group, and product placement is one of them.
Well, and you know, the other thing I thought about is this sort of a sign that these companies have given up any attempt to try and sell to new audiences? I mean, we all kind of know that is what they're doing anyway, but I mean, I know I've kind of always felt that at least in some small way that Marvel and DC were trying to find new readers. But I mean, isn't this sort of them saying, well, you know, we're not gonna get new readers, so let's maximize our profits for the core readership that we have right now, and not worry about selling more comics as opposed to finding other ways to bring in revenue.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're not putting, you know, product placement into comics to draw people in. No one's going to read new X-Men because, you know, someone has a Nike shirt.
So now, hard to find those.
I haven't seen that. Which Sal, before we go on, can you clarify that panel from that new X-Men book?
Sure.
You told us about this right before we recorded tonight.
Yeah, there's a website, thegreatcurve.net, which is a blog about comics and the industry. And on there, after that Wall Street Journal article went up and every comic site grabbed, you know, onto that, the guy put a blog about that image that they used of the character Wallflower with a blue shirt on with a white Nike symbol on it. And it seems that image was photoshopped by the Wall Street Journal, because the actual comic of X-Men number or new X-Men number 20 with that panel does not have that Nike symbol on it. The caption in the original article read Nike product placements in the Marvel comic book New X-Men, but that is inaccurate, as you know, that image did not appear in that book that way. So just to sort of clear that up. But the interesting thing was in the panel, I think on the next page, there was actually a character with a Nike shirt. There was a logo on his back, but they didn't use that in the article. So it was just some sort of screw-up by the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, but, you know, they did have a product placement in that issue, but not on that panel, and, you know, maybe it wasn't prominent enough, so...
Probably a liberal media conspiracy.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal.
Dave, well, it's like winking when I said that.
Oh, no, Dave's here, and we just mentioned politics. Fuck.
No, so you can't trust the press either, you know? I mean, who can you trust anymore?
Me.
Us.
Yes, trust
around comics. You can trust us.
We are your friends.
This episode of Around Comics is brought to you by Dark Tower Comic Books and Collectibles. Already Chicago's source for the best in comic selection, knowledge, and service, we're announcing that Dark Tower is getting even better. Dark Tower is moving. As of Monday, May 1st, you can visit their new location at 4835 Northwestern Avenue. What does this mean to you? A bigger store, bigger selection, more room for gaming, and more parking. Dark Tower still offers one of the best pull list memberships in Chicago, but don't forget about their trade paperback readers program and convenient pre-ordering. Because of the move, Dark Tower is having a mega moving sale. Between now and April 30th, go to their store at 4612 North Lincoln Avenue and take advantage of an amazing 50% off all back issues, all trades and collected editions, and half off all $1 comics.
You can also take 50% off their entire stock of HeroClix and 25% off all statues and toys. Need back issues? Buy a long box for $100 and fill it with as many $1 comics as you can fit. For more information, call Dark Tower at 773-506-0400 or visit them on the web at darktowercomics.net.
Now, we did bring this topic up on the forum today, and we did get some very good responses. Sal, do you have some of those forum posts for us?
I do. Let's see. Our first one is from Matt Est, who everyone knows Matt. Matt said, well, we've gotten used to product placement in movies and TV shows, and I don't necessarily mind it if it isn't done in a ridiculously clumsy way. As in, hey, Veronica Mars, check out my new Ford Taurus. It sure gets great gas mileage. The problem with product placement in comics, though, is a bigger deal. When is enough going to be enough? We are already treated to 10 to 15 pages of ads in a normal monthly comic, and prices are only going higher. $2.99 a book, and I got to flip through this many ads. On top of that, I now have to see Wolverine wearing Reeboks. Where's the payoff for the fans? At least with ads on TV, we're getting to see the show for free. It seems a fair trade-off. More ads in comics with prices climbing? Enough is enough.
That sounds like a Matt post. We love Matt. I hope he's enjoying Maine right now. He's on vacation, eating lobster.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of said the same thing. It's just a matter of how much are they going to try and push.
Yeah, if Wolverine shows up in Reeboks, I'm done. Nothing but Nikes for me.
I think Wolverine's more of a K Knights type guy.
K Swiss.
Actually, he would wear Wolverines.
Pumas.
End of the show, everyone.
Yes, I'm done. Thank you.
Maybe Puma, the character Puma, could come back and Puma just, would license him for his own book.
Stop giving them ideas.
Oh, I'm just horrified of fashion shoes.
All right, our next one is from Brody Baggins, and he posted, my feeling is that if the comics are going to make a conscious choice to set the comic in a real-world setting and make all the backgrounds and landmarks relatable to a real-world place, then the ads and logos are not only welcome but expected. If Spider-Man swings through Times Square, I would rather see Coke, Disney, and Motorola, not Poke, Krisney, and Votermola. As for T-shirts and shoes with recognizable logos, that is a different story. In moderation, it's wonderful... It's wonderful and adds to the real-world feel of the stories. Young kids would want to find the same shirt his or her favorite hero wore. That's cute and harmless. Now, if Nike added a logo to the X uniforms, or a future person comes back to the past with vintage 2007 Converse All-Stars, then we have crossed the line. Like with all things excess kills, product placement in moderation is fine in real-world settings as it adds to the reality of the situation.
So the X-Men sponsored by Nike, it'd be like Jordan in the Olympics. The X-Men would be sponsored by Adidas, but Wolverine signed another deal with Nike, and so he wears the flag over his emblem.
There's enough X-Men titles at all the shoe companies can probably get in on it.
For each one, yeah. Astonishing X-Men.
Astonishing X-Men. Adidas.
Moderation is not a word that these marketing companies know.
Hey, I work in marketing, and you're right. There is no such thing as moderation. You hit it as hard and fast as you can and saturate, because in this climate with branding, if you don't do that, you get lost in the storm. So you're right, there is no moderation.
Well, it's to have moderation, you would have to have someone neutral between the two figure it out, but that's not the way this relationship works. No. Marketers are going to try and put as much in there, and these companies are going to try and make as much money from that, and from that combination, you won't usually get moderation. You'll get maybe moderation through failure, but not moderation through careful, thoughtful process.
Oh, if it's successful, forget it. It's over. What else we have, Sal?
David posted, as long as it does not interfere with the flow of the story, it's not that big of a deal. If my eyes are drawn to a bottle of Coke or a box of Pampers, we've got problems. It's subtle for the most part in movies and on TV. Keep it that way in the comics. How many of us say Xerox instead of photocopy, Kleenex instead of tissue? It is everywhere, but we should be able to minimize it in the comics. There was an issue of Black Panther a couple of years ago, issue number 53, I think, where Okoye, I don't know how to pronounce that name, O-K-O-Y-E, is driving T'Challa and the Black Panther, I don't want to spoil it, towards what appears to be the Throg's Neck Bridge, or Whitestone Bridge. And off on the side, there are two billboards. One is a generically drawn ad, and the other is an orange-colored, white, dotty truth ad. I believe after they decided Logan should cut down on smoking, Marvel partnered with Truth to advertise within the story pages of their books. It didn't sway me from reading this comic. I noticed it, chuckled, and kept reading. My only problem is if this is going to date the stories more than they already are. It may look corny to have someone wearing what would equal a Max Headroom t-shirt in a few years in one of today's books. I can picture it now. Hey, Reed, fire up the Foreman grill since Johnny's not here to cook me up some burgers.
I think my response to that was, the Foreman grill is timeless.
I just thought of something that, you know, my joke earlier about Silver Age comics having ads. Imagine if someone did a Silver Age comic, like, yeah, where, like, Barry Allen stops to enjoy some flavorful Marlboro. There's no ill health effects from that. Or, like, Captain America enjoys, like, a Camel cigarette while, you know, hanging out with Bucky, like, old Golden Age, just like, watch the JSA sitting around a table all smoking cigarettes. And
did the JSA smoke?
Maybe. I don't know. It's like, it's a JSA presented by Marlboro.
It's like those old Batman stories, you know, Daddy Spank.
You know? Papa Spank.
Sal, do we or a post from
before? We have one from Equinox. Okay. He said, I'm fine with products or logos being put into comics as long as they don't detract from the story and its presentation. I don't expect my kids to wear plain shirts and jackets to school each day. Why should we expect the same thing from comic characters? As an extension of this, I also feel that comic publishers should know when it is appropriate to have logos on certain characters. For example, within a JSA story, if you show Stargirl and Wildcat in their civilian identities, it would make sense to have Courtney wearing a Nike hooded sweatshirt, but having Ted Grant appear in the same style of clothing would most likely seem out of place. Comic publishers are going to keep looking for new ways to increase the revenue that is generated by their books. Just as the internet is changing the way that advertisers are targeting consumers in general, comics also have to adapt to their methods of earning more advertising dollars per book.
All right. I don't know if I agree with all those points. That does prove that we do have some pretty keen posters. They sound like they know what they're talking about. But
how is the spelling?
But yeah, how is the grammar? you know, everyone seems to say it's okay if it's in moderation, and I think that's the key, is moderation. But I don't trust moderation when it comes to this. Sal, you?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a balancing act, and you know, I just don't know if there are people in place that can do that well. You know, I think we have to sort of expect the worst, hope for the best, and it'll probably lie somewhere in between.
I hope so, and we could talk about this for quite a while, but I think we should probably move on to some final thoughts and pick up the conversation again on the forum. Mr. Caters, can you give me some of your final thoughts?
I guess my final thought on it would be for everyone to be careful about saying that they're okay with advertising being everywhere. I know it's kind of a popular opinion for people to assume that, you know, they are impervious to this type of cultural branding, but no one is. So, just as a word of warning, I think that it's not so innocent all the time, and I'm not saying that all this product placement is some sort of work of the devil or something, but you do need to be aware of the sort of effects these things can have on content and creation. So, just word of warning for anyone who likes.
Mr. Wacta.
Yeah, I'd just like to put out a plea
to everyone listening who does not want to see these ads in their comics or to see them get out of control, because as soon as their foot is in the door, it is my belief that they will take every inch that they can get. So if you see something that you don't like with this, the comic book companies are one of few places that will actually listen to what their fans have to say. So contact Marvel, contact DC, and if you don't like it, let them know. If you approve of it, then don't do anything. So that the rest of us can sound like the only voice and tell these companies that it is not what we want to see, because we have to stop it now. If we're going to stop it at any time, it'll just get worse. It'll just get so ingrained that we'll be stuck with it forever. So get out there, write your emails, send it to the head honchos there at DC and Marvel, and let them know that we're not going to take it. We're going to stand up for our rights as comic book consumers, and we will not accept kind of treatment.
Unite everyone.
So basically, if you don't want to see it, then you've got to let your voice be heard.
Absolutely. Sal, your final thoughts?
Well, you know, it's certainly nothing new in any type of, you know, commercial business to try and find new streams of revenue. It shouldn't be a surprise to any of us that these companies are willing to do it. It will, you know, we'll wait and see how bad it gets. And I think that's sort of the key, is that we know how fickle comic book fans can be. The readership has been steadily going down for quite a while, regardless of the recent slight resurgence. The numbers today are much lower than what they once were. And I think the only reason this will work, and the only reason that marketing companies will come to Marvel or DC or any other comic book publisher, is if their titles are selling. So if it gets to the point where it's obtrusive and fans are annoyed enough by it not to buy the books, those numbers will go down, and you will not find companies willing to spend the money to put their ads in these books. So that's my theory. I think at some point it will saturate, oversaturate. You know, as Dave said, these companies will come in, they'll test it. If it's any, you know, bit successful, they will come in gangbusters and everyone will be doing it. But I think it'll burn itself out. I think that at some point fans will complain. And, you know, say what you will about Marvel to DC, they do listen when they're told the same thing enough times. So it'll come, it'll go, I think, and it won't be that big of a deal.
And my final thoughts are pretty short, pretty sweet. This is not going to go away. It's going to continue to grow. Dave's right. The foot is in the door. Get used to it, guys. But for comic fans out there, you're going to have options, because it's not going to be in every book. It's not going to be in every title. You're going to be able to, as a consumer, not do this if you don't want to. If you don't like product placement, read other books. They're going to go after a lot of the higher selling books. And I hope that as you mature as a comic reader, you will be able to go and search out good quality books, that product placement isn't going to be a mandated part of those books. We're not going to stop it. And for those that think that it's okay to start with and moderation is fine, you know, there's an old saying on, you know, how do you boil a frog? This is an old Southern deal, you know. You don't throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, because he'll jump right out. You put them in a pot of water and you slowly raise the temperature and they don't notice that they're being boiled. That's what this will be. It will gradually grow over time, and by the time we look back on it, it's going to be everywhere. So be aware of it. Don't be the frog. So those are my final thoughts. Let's end the discussion.
And that's country wisdom by Adam Sneesman.
I wanted that guy who tried it failed. He's like, all right, time to boil it. Hey. Well, son of a bitch. He jumped right out.
That frog's too smart to boil.
Well, I'm here and they raise the temperature out of water.
It's somebody with a lot of time on their hands and really hungry.
This is trial and error.
Hey, Bessie Sue, wrong way.
But just remember, you can put kittens in the oven, but it don't make them biscuits.
It does slowly temperature.
You're making this up as you go, right? I mean,
you're listening to Around Comics. You can even listen naked, and no one would ever know. But seriously, I wouldn't go around telling people about that, because it's pretty freaking weird.
These are your top stories for the week of April 17th, 2006. Warner's, Fox, and Verizon Wireless are teaming up to present Atomic County, the comics created by the character Seth Cohen on The OC. The art on the show is actually drawn by cartoonist Eric Wright. The series will run as 14 animated episodes, which are available via mobile phones only to Verizon customers. Who owns Smallville? According to Variety, the ongoing Siegel-DC-Time Warner battle for Superboy took another step at the end of March when Judge Ronald S.W. Liu, in a summary judgment, found that Smallville may be infringing upon the copyright to Superboy. Warner, as it had done in answering the Siegel's complaint in late 2004, asserted that the Siegel's complaint claims infringement on the costume character of Superboy, which the Siegel's claim was created by Jerry. And Smallville does not feature Superboy, but rather a young Clark Kent, which appeared in Superman comics prior to the first publication of Superboy Comics, 1944. In making this claim, Warner Brothers said that the use of Clark Kent in Smallville is not subject to the termination of the transfer of copyright filed by the Siegels, even if the court does find the termination to be valid. Win a trip to Comic-Con 2006. Dark Horse Comics announces the 2006 Comic-Con International San Diego Contest, designed to bring a Dark Horse fan to the largest comic convention in North America, July 20th through the 23rd at the San Diego Convention Center. Comic-Con International is the largest gathering of comic book publishers, creators, and professionals of any event of its kind in the world. The convention also features several other aspects of pop culture, including film and television screenings and autograph sessions with media stars. Dark Horse will select a grand prize winner to receive an all-expenses-paid trip to Comic-Con International 2006. Simply register to win at darkhorse.com, and maybe you'll be heading to San Diego in July. Brionne on White Tiger. Joining famed young adult fantasy author Tamara Pierce, French artist extraordinaire Phil Brionne has signed on to do pencils and inks for the upcoming White Tiger series. "I grew up with Marvel characters," says Brionne. "When Marvel offered me the opportunity to work on the new female White Tiger, I was immediately thrilled." The White Tiger series will focus on the new character introduced in Brian Michael Bendis' Daredevil run. With scripts by best-selling children's author Tamara Pierce, Brionne is ready to bring his energetic pencils to the new female White Tiger. Femme Noir creators Christopher Mills and Joe Stanton, along with inker Horatio Ottolini, are proud to announce the beginning of a new 28-week Femme Noir story arc, Blonde Justice, at SupernaturalCrime.com. The first weekly episode of the new story premiered on Tuesday, April 11th. Femme Noir is a web-exclusive mystery comic strip starring a mysterious female private eye operating in the dark city of Port Nocturne, a politically corrupt, crime-ridden metropolis where the smell of gunpowder hangs in the air like cheap perfume. Every black alley comes to a dead end, and justice is blonde. The Femme Noir comic updates every Tuesday at SupernaturalCrime.com. Divorce is always hard, especially when children are involved. Sometimes a family member is willing to do just about anything to see more of his or her loved ones, even if that means destroying the earth. For Emily Edison, those awkward teen years are about to get even more confusing. Emily Edison will be available in June and is written by David Hopkins and drawn by artist Brock Rizzi. Fans can also get an early look of the art of Emily Edison this month when Rizzi hosts a solo art exhibit at the Magnolia Bar Gallery in Dallas, Texas. Also, make sure to look for an excerpt of Emily Edison appearing this May on Free Comic Book Day in Viper Comics Presents Anthology. For more information on Emily Edison, visit vipercomics.com. Friends of Lulu, the national nonprofit organization whose purpose is to promote and encourage female readership and participation in the comic book industry, is launching a new fund and will be jumpstarting it at CAPE this year. The fund will be for women in the industry who wish to pursue legal action in sexual assault cases by helping to provide money for representation and also emotional support when needed. For more information, go to ZeusComics.com. Next Wave in Crayon. For Next Wave, Agents of Hate number 5, Marvel is releasing both a regular version as well as a Crayon Butchery variant, complete with crayon. Now you can not only read, but color Monica, the Captain, Boom Boom, Machine Man, and all your favorite Next Wave characters. Marvel is putting the crayon in your hands with this very special Next Wave Agents of Hate number 5 Crayon Butchery variant. Just remember to try and stay inside the lines. DC keeps going back to press. DC Comics Infinite Crisis and 1 year later continue to thrill comics fans. DC has added 7 titles to the list of books going back to press for new printings. These 3 titles are scheduled to arrive in stores on May 3rd. Detective Comics number 817 will feature a combined version of the covers to Detective Comics 817 and 819. Infinite Crisis number 6 will feature an updated pencils-only version of Jim Lee's original cover art. And Teen Titans number 34, which will feature a pencils-only version of Tony Daniels' original cover art. These 4 titles are scheduled to arrive in stores on May 10th. Crisis Aftermath, The Battle for Bloodhaven number 1. It will feature a pencils-only version of the original cover art by Daniel Acuna. Detective Comics number 818 will feature a combined version of the covers to Detective Comics number 818 and Batman number 653 by Simon Bianchi. Green Arrow number 60 will feature a recolored version of the original cover by Scott McDaniel and Andy Owens. And finally, OMAC Project Infinite Crisis Special number 1, which will feature a new black and white cover. These have been your top stories for the week of April 17th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, please go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics, news, reviews, and opinions.
And those are your top headlines for the week. Let's start at the top here. Verizon to run OC Comics over the phone. Who here is excited?
I'm not excited, but I do watch the OC regularly, and they managed to fit in a mention of that within the show. This within the show, the character Seth Cohen wrote a comic book, and they had a thing where one of the characters is like, look, they're putting your comic book over phones. And then they had a commercial for that for Verizon immediately afterwards.
And this will be Tom's last time on the panel.
Did you wait?
I can't believe that Tom watches the OC. This is
Alan Humberg, who wrote Young Avengers, wrote the first season and a half of the OC before he wrote Young Avengers and all the stuff he's doing now. He's going to be the guy writing Wonder Woman. One of his first big jobs in TV was writing the OC.
Can he get a comic out on time now?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you listened to the Word Balloon interview with him?
I don't listen to other podcasts.
Oh, okay. He talks about the late stuff because he kind of mentioned how going in, he told Marvel there was no way it could do Young Avengers constantly for more than a year.
Then Marvel should have hired someone that could. Period. There's too many good writers out there. I don't care if he writes the OC. I like Young Avengers. That's one of the books I look forward to. But if a guy can't commit to getting stuff out on time, then
I would blame Marvel Not the fine Alan Heinberg.
True.
You told him.
Absolutely right. Who owns Smallville? How do you guys feel about this whole Siegel Superboy deal? You know, I've heard that in Infinite Crisis, and spoil a little bit, but there are Superboys dying left and right, and I've heard that DC is going to get rid of the Superboy character, rename him, and they're doing this
because
of the lawsuit.
See, that's only something I'd heard recently about that, because I'd always been under the impression that a lot of the lawsuits involved, kind of, as far as the comic books went, were kind of settled, and it was stuff outside of that. But, I mean, the whole thing is very confusing at this point, because now you're dealing not even with the original people, you're dealing with their descendants.
Yeah.
And that's when stuff gets, I mean, it's really complicated
They go into legalese, they say, well, it's Superboy, but young Clark Kent using his powers. Well, that's not Superboy, but if he puts on the costume, now he's Superboy. It's like, I have no idea.
I mean, it's not based on the fact of whether Siegel got screwed over by DC, but just the fact that it's one of those things that when it goes on long enough, none of the original people involved are involved with it anymore. So that's when it never gets solved.
You know, are we hopefully at a point in comics and dealing with creators that are savvy enough to know when to sign off rights and hold on to stuff, where it's going to be 20 years from now, and you know Bendis is going to be saying, "Oh, but Dana Pilgrim is my character. You can't use her in a TV show."
I don't know. Alan Moore is complaining about that. Let's not get into that.
I think that's why a lot of this is there. You know, Sal, how do you feel about the Seagulls and Superboy?
Well, you know, I don't know enough about the actual case to comment too much on it. You know, I would agree with Tom that once you get past the original creator and the original licensee of the product, things tend to get ugly because there's not so much a connection any longer. You have, you know, family members that are looking at it from one aspect of not only monetarily, but also nostalgia and holding on to a piece of someone that's passed away for them, and so they're gonna, you know, fight and pull out all the stops because of that. But then you have a company that is just, you know, sort of trying to do their business, and on one hand they understand and they may sympathize, but on the other hand it's still a legal process, so you know it's probably going to get uglier before it's finished.
Do you seriously think that the Seagulls are doing? I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm not saying that they're not owed something, but do you seriously think that they're doing this out of nostalgia instead of monetary reasons?
Well, it's certainly a legacy issue. I mean, if you know, if that was your father or grandfather, and you know, you're trying to hold on to some part of it. I think, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's just purely money. I mean, maybe it is. I don't know them. But to say that it's just they're doing it simply for money, you know, that's easy to say, but I don't know that's necessarily the truth. If it was someone that was in your family that had created that product, I mean, you know, that character, and then you saw them get, you know, basically stolen from, I think that there would be more, you know, if it was just money, I think it would be simpler.
Well, the legacy of it is that now DC is going to phase that character out. There's not going to be a Superboy anymore. That doesn't say much for Joel Siegel's legacy.
Well, there might not be a Superboy in DC or the DC universe, but that doesn't mean there won't be a Superboy any longer.
I think there's a certain sense where nostalgia gets mixed with money. It's the two, you know, like, it's not one or the other. It almost feels to me a lot of times with, I mean, there's been a couple of cases like this with comic book. It's way harder once the person does. Maybe, you know, Siegel at some point would have said, oh, whatever, I'll take this much money for it. But when people get emotion attached with money, attached with what you think you deserve, that's when stuff gets really complicated. And I don't think there's a fine line between nostalgia and money. because money causes a lot of problems emotionally too. You know, you may think, you know, you deserve this and you didn't get it. So I think it's complicated.
It's very complicated. Well, let's move on to some lighter fare. Win a trip to Comic-Con. Go to darkhorse.com.
Can do.
I'm already going.
Already.
I registered. Actually, I mean, it was really hard. Don't go register. No one out there go register. Yeah.
You can't win it, most likely. No, it's a series of 200 questions.
It was very easy to register for, and it's always nice. I got to sign up for the Dark Horse newsletter, which Sal already subscribes to. That's one of the places that he gets all the great news that we get on the site. But it was really easy to register for. You get the newsletter. Go do it. And if you get a trip to Comic-Con because you heard it on Around Comics, well, give us something.
I will give you $50 to buy something for me, and then you can pay for the postage to send it to me. And you'll get a glossy 8.5x11.
Wow. What a deal.
I have the glossy 8.5x10 of my bedroom.
And stop by the room.
Yes, and if you are going to Comic-Con, stop by and say hi to Dave.
They sell horror comics.
Okay, guys. White Tiger. And I had to whip out some really bad French pronunciation, so I'm hoping that his name is Brionne. White Tiger, yeah, I know, Dave, that you are an avid Daredevil reader. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this character going into her own comic?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I liked it in Daredevil. I don't really know much about White Tiger and the legacy behind it. And
a guy gets an amulet and
right,
he gets
but
powers.
There's something that's about the amulet it. Where he's also linked to like panthers somehow. There's something, I don't know.
Tigers with these, and panthers.
Well, something about the amulet. There are three parts of this amulet. Different people have had this thing, and you know, when it comes together, you get these powers and. I don't know. I might get into it because I have an old Spectacular Spider-Man issue from the 70s that has White Tiger, and I thought it was really cool when I was a kid. And then I liked it in the Bendis thing and what happened there. So it could be interesting. It all depends on who writes it, what the story's really about. You know, she's ex-federal agent. Or I don't know if she's an ex-agent. I know that she kind of was on the outs with the head of the FBI because of what happened with Daredevil. So
Murdoch deal.
It could be interesting if they mix in some of that FBI stuff, and you know.
Sal, have you seen some of the beginning sketches or some of the beginning art pages?
Yes, I did. I did see some of that. It looks. I've never heard of this French illustrator before, but that's not surprising because I'm not French. But it looked pretty amazing.
It looked beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'll pick that book up or not. You know, as my pappy always said, I think I'd rather sandpaper a bobcat's butt in a telephone booth than read a bad book.
I'm never gonna live that down.
But no, actually, seriously though, it does look good. It's an interesting character. Yeah, depending on who, you know, the writing of it, and if it's, you know, put together nice, it could be good.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. I will definitely check it out. Maybe we'll throw it on the top of the stack. Femme Noir. I just loved saying the line. It is a Port Nocturne, a politically corrupt, crime-ridden metropolis where the smell of gunpowder hangs in the air like cheap perfume. I just loved reading that. So this is a webcomic. And I've got to go and look at the story again and see if Femme Noir is actually produced as a regular comic. But you know, I think the real story here is promoting comics through websites where you get to go, you know, every week, get a new issue or a new page, whatever. Do you think, I'll start out with Tom, do you think this is a good way for comics to go to promote, especially smaller press stuff like this?
Sure. I mean, it works better than a $3 book, probably. I mean, just realistically, how much can you lose by putting out a page a week on the internet? I mean,
if it's good, people will buy it.
Yeah, if it's good, people will buy it.
We hope. Sal, we had talked about Rex Mundy, and I turned you on to the online comic that they had produced. Did you have a chance to read that?
No. I have not had a chance to check that out yet. I did download it. I have it. I just haven't read it yet.
Really good. And I think it is the exact way that creators should promote their comics through the web. It was a supplemental story to that, and it was the way it was put out was fantastic.
Well, bless your thumping gizzard.
Oh, it was so good. So if you're interested, check it out at naturalcrime.com. Another comic that's coming out, and you'll be able to check it out at Free Comic Book Day through the Viper Comics Presents anthology, is Interdimensional Emily. Dave, are you interested in checking that out?
No.
I could have told you that.
Sorry. It's just...
It's an indie comic. Come on.
I know. Well, you know, if it's free comic book day, you pick it up and you check it out and you see if you like it. It's hard for me to say, you know, with this interest. I have a hard time going to blurbs. I have to see it. Hold it. I can see it on the web. I can see preview pages. That's where the web works for me. I can read a few pages of it, get the feel for where the story's going. But hearing a blurb, it's really hard for me to.
Well, Tom, you gotta check it out?
I'm gonna buy all of them. Dave's too busy.
I'll just borrow them from Tom. It's just easier.
I'm the same way, kind of. Like, blurbs don't mean a whole lot, but if I see it and I pick it up, I'll look at it. But
maybe that's what Free Comic Book Day is all about. You get a free preview of it. You know, check it out there.
Hey, you know, speaking of a cool little thing that I saw somebody do to promote a comic, who was it? Devil's Due? No, I'm sorry, not Devil's Due. Silent Devil. They have a book coming out called. Tales of Mark Grimm, and it's very sort of a noirish book. But they did a little downloadable movie trailer for the book, and they put a lot of the artwork in there and animated it and a soundtrack to it, and it was actually really cool, and got me interested in the book. It was put together really well and produced well, and you can go to their website and get it, silentdevil.com. But check it out; it was pretty cool.
We've been doing it over at Ronin. We have little... There's a guy who's been putting together little 30-second trailers for us. We were trying to get one made for Scarfish. I don't know where the state of that is. I know the guy had some issues where he couldn't do as much work on those things anymore, but he was putting together these little... They're just like movie trailers, and they had musical soundtrack. And our plan was to put it on a battery-powered laptop and have him at...
Conventions,
yeah, for people to see as they come by as another attraction, and then also have it on a website and stuff. And I think they're pretty cool, but I could put one together myself if I ever had the time, but I just don't.
True. Guys, Friends of Lulu. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this, except for sexual harassment is bad if you're at a convention.
I agree, Chris.
Agreed.
If you're at a convention, don't go over the boundaries that are set there or anywhere. And if this means a lot to you, go to ZeusComics.com. You can donate there, get involved. Everybody I know wants women to be involved in comics, to read them, to write them, to draw them. And if this is a male-dominated market and all that crap out there is prevalent, then that's not good. So,
well, I mean, as long as they know their place. That was a joke.
Jeez.
God.
Oh, send your letters to Tom Caters.
That's right.
Well, you know, this issue was sort of, you know, highlighted because of an incident that happened at a convention. I'm not going to get into the details of it. I'm sure most people have heard about it, whatever. But, you know, the thing that sometimes I think gets a little out of control with these issues, and not to try and make light of a situation like this, obviously sexual harassment is bad, and if you don't know that, you already have a problem, regardless of where you're at. But you know, to sort of use that incident to blanket the industry as a whole, and you know, try and, as much as I understand trying to promote women in comics and trying to crack through, because it is an issue, there's a boys club mentality throughout the whole industry, but to try and say that, you know, one incident of sexual harassment is makes the industry prevalent of that seems a little bit out of line to me. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a woman. I've never been sexually harassed. If I was, I, you know, didn't pay attention to it, but that's me. It just seems like sometimes people are using incidents like this for their own agendas. Certainly not, you know, in this instance, the victim. I mean, that's not who I'm talking about, but other people that, you know, may get involved with it or try and use it to promote some other agenda. And that's the thing I'm, you know, wary of a bit. And I don't know. It's a complicated issue that is not going to be solved unless we certainly talk about it and try and figure out better ways to educate people and control this kind of thing.
Right. And the, you know, to clarify a little bit, the one that you're talking about at the convention was, it went beyond sexual harassment and went into sexual assault.
Yes.
That's a whole other game. But you know, I know what you're talking about different agendas, and we have to be very careful of being hypersensitive to this and knowing that there are people out there that will further agendas at the expense of the victims of certain crimes. So it is a big issue, and you know, it's more than we're going to talk about today. So let's talk about crayons.
What a segue.
Yes. Next Wave in Crayon. Just a neat little promotion thing. I don't know if it's a big story, but Sal, you are a Next Wave reader. Are you interested in picking up the Crayon Butcher variant?
Well, I don't think I will, just because I generally don't pick up variant covers of stuff that I already have or reprints of stuff that I already have. But I like the idea. I mean, it's certainly in line with that book. I enjoy Next Wave a lot. I just read the latest issue, and it's just a fun, funny, ridiculous sort of book. And you know, this kind of promotion is you know, perfectly in line with what that, you know, that title is all about. So I think it's kind of cool.
Dave had a great quote while we were listening to the news. He goes, "How are you going to color it with one crayon?
Yeah, you get one color,
monochromatic.
I can't
man.
Express my creativity with one color. I need the whole, I need the big 64 box. Okay,
you need amber to make it work.
That's the special one.
Where's my flesh color? Where'd it go?
Where's flesh?
Use peach." The last story, this is one, it's every week we record, DC goes back to press. But this time, when I was recording the news, what I got sick of saying was, with a new pencils only variant.
Pencils only.
God, just reprint the book! God!
Well, how are you going to get people to buy both?
Print more?
I know, I've seen people who get that. I don't. Pencil only thing doesn't really attract me at all.
Well, there must be a market for it.
There is.
Somebody's got to be buying. You know, they'll buy the first one, then they'll buy the second one, and if they want to do it, it's their money. They can spend it any way they want. I'll buy one.
Those are the people that don't care about product in comics.
Yeah, you're probably.
Hey,
right.
Did you hear that, people?
I got four on order. What are you talking? No, just.
Listen up, you pencil drawing bastards.
You know, it's kind of funny though that it's like, we're going to give you something exclusive by taking all the work out of it. The finished product, we're going to chip it down to its, you know, sketch. And instead of a fully colored and inked, you know, product, we're just going to give you the sketch of it, and it's something special.
Original noodle.
Original noodle with a script.
It even has the, it even looks like a bar napkin.
Yeah.
This is a plea to DC or Marvel or whoever. Stop doing this. Just reprint it. Put second printing on the inside cover and send them out. Stop trying to appeal to this collector mentality. Well, and my appeal to collectors is stop buying them.
The only way they're going to stop doing it is if people stop buying it.
Stop buying them.
That's the only way. I mean,
so I'd like to make an impassioned plea to everyone who's listening.
Blah, 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 blah.
To rise up against the oppressors.
I am horribly offended by pencil drawings.
Hey, you know, you think if they reprint, like, a cover that has a Coca-Cola billboard on it, you know, Coke might get upset if it's only in pencil?
Not as long as everyone in it is having the greatest summer day of their life.
And a Coke.
And a Coke.
And a smile.
Yeah. Superboy.
Everybody on the panel at one point got burnt by a holographic gold stamped variant.
If you consider having the entire Executioner's song in public getting burnt, then yes, I am guilty.
Hey man, don't lay your 90s guilt off on me, okay?
Yeah, some of us enjoyed all those hologram Fatal Attraction covers. Sorry if that bothers you.
Well, Tom always jokes with me and says, don't tell me what to buy whenever I...
Yeah, tell me what to buy.
Well, now I'm telling you what not to buy. If you bought the first printing of something, and they come out with a second printing that is a pencils only, don't buy that crap. If you didn't get it the first time around, and that's all you can get, that's fine. I'm going to get on a rant. People that buy two copies of the same book, instead of going out and buying something else... It's all that frustrates me.
Well, the thing that bothers me is I'm someone that will simply just buy two copies of the first run. One to lock away and never look at. And one to read once and then never look at. So, to me, the people that are buying the second printing are just kind of, you know, weak. You know, they're not out there getting the true collector's mentality. Now that everyone hates me.
I'm electroplating all my comics.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't dipped in bronze.
Here come the slap books. I've ranted enough. Sal, you got anything on the news today?
No, I did want to mention on our on the website, though, we now have news feeds. There's a under the news menu, there's a submenu called news feeds, and that's basically other websites, other comic book websites that offer RSS feeds. You can go there and just sort of get recaps of their newest news and then click on there and go to their site if it's something you want to read. So just a new feature on our website.
And I want to chime in. We'll get into it in announcements. First of all, I have nothing to do with the website. I don't do anything. I submit articles from time to time. Sal's work on the website kicks ass. That Around Comics site is kicking so much butt. If you have not visited it, please go. Sal, golf clap.
Thank you. I'm going to blush.
The site kicks ass.
We like you. We really, really like you.
Well, you know, it's a labor of love.
Yes, I can tell that you love that. Well, I think that will wrap us up for Wired Wire Comic News. Please go to the website, check out the full versions of these stories, and it is updated almost daily, so go visit. That means it is time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the Stack.
That's right. It is Top of the Stack. Our chance every week to let you know what we have been reading. Mr. Salazar, what is your Top of the Stack?
My Top of the Stack this week is a book you mentioned that you turned me on to called Rex Mundi. You gave me the first trade to check out. It's called Book One, The Guardian of the Temple. And this is a book I'd been hearing things about for probably a couple years, maybe. No, it hasn't been that long, but for a while. And heard a lot of good things about it, just never got a chance to read it, but I was really glad that you picked up the trade and let me borrow it, because it was right up my alley. It was something I really enjoyed. It's basically a quest for the Holy Grail told as a murder mystery. It's set in a alternate history Europe, where the Catholic Church still reigns supreme. They never lost their, you know, grip on power in Europe, and magic exists. And there are a few other things that are different, but much of it is, you know, is set in sort of our timeline, just an alternate reality of it. The United States, Civil War of the United States was ended in a impasse, and now there's like a Confederate States of America and the Northern States of America or something like that. But this book is based in Europe, and the detail that went into this story is pretty impressive. I started reading it, and it's a mystery, so you're picking up clues. You're following Dr. Julien Saunier as he investigates the theft of a scroll from a crypt of this church in Paris. His friend, who is the bishop, or no, I'm sorry, he's not the bishop, he's the priest there in the church, he was the caretaker of this secret archive of information, and someone stole this scroll from there and then ended up getting this doctor involved in it, and he's trying to figure out this murder mystery from there on out. And as you go along through the book, you start picking up things, and there's different clues given to him. And as I started to research some of this stuff, it's all sort of based in reality. There's a painting he sent to a gallery looking for this clue, and there's a painting by an artist, and I can't think of it off the top of my head, sorry, but I started to research that painting, and there's all these like conspiracy theories about this painter and the paintings that he did, this one specifically, in real life, and it's there's all sorts of things like that woven into this tale, things that are conspiracy theories and, you know, different mysteries throughout history that the writers here have put in this book to tell a really interesting tale. The art is fantastic. The detail in the buildings and the scenery is some of the best I've ever seen. It really adds to the feel of the book. And I tell you, I picked this up, I started reading it, and I couldn't put it down. And I think you said the same thing, Chris. You just, once you started reading it, you wanted to find out what happened. And it, from beginning to end, I couldn't stop reading it. So, one more thing. It's written and lettered by Arvid Nelson. The artist is Eric J. And colors by Jeremy Cox. It's put out by Image Comics, and it's $14.95 for the first trade. And I believe there's a second trade already available. So if you're into history at all, mysteries, murder, suspense, intrigue, politics, it's all in here, and it's very well done. So Rex Mundy is my top of the stack.
I absolutely love that book. Why I didn't hear about it makes me angry. I'm ranting all over the place tonight. But it is produced by Image, but it is the reason I found this book is because it was in one of our news stories, because it's moving from Image to Dark Horse, starting with, I believe, issue 19. And I was like, hey, that sounds pretty cool. So I got the first trade. Unbelievable. Absolutely love this book. So, Dave or Tom, have either one of you read it?
No.
I
will soon.
I will. I was thinking about it, but the LCS was out of it. So, I'll get around to it when I see it next.
It was... Anyone out there that liked Brian's recap of it, thinks that sounds like something that they would like, you will like it even more than that. This book is not one that you just flip through. It's great. And I'm mad at you for doing this as your top of the stack, because that's what I was going to do next week.
Sorry, man. Couldn't help myself. I got to say, though, I mean, it's a pretty dense work, too. I mean, there's a lot going on in the book, and I actually want to go back and read it again, so you're not getting it back for another couple of weeks.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah, I do have the second trade. I'll throw that your way. I mean, this is a book that has, like, newspaper articles at the end of each issue that has... You know, stories of characters that are in the book, and it's so good. Dave, what is your top of the stack?
My top of the stack this week is the Squadron Supreme number 2 by J. Michael Straczynski, with Gary Frank doing the pencils, Chris Sotomayor on the colors, and Jonathan Seibel on and BCO letterer. Basically, this is it. The team has been assembled, and the nudity and foul language are gone. Continuing the story that was begun in Supreme Power, Squadron Supreme is the entire super team now. And the book is no longer published as an adult imprint. Now it is a standard Marvel book with the parental advisory warning above the barcode. And at the same time, I'm actually reading the original Squadron Supreme, Rick Grunwald's series from the 1980s. So I think that the fans of that original series from the 80s will find this new Squadron Supreme much more than they found Supreme Power, which was its predecessor, because now we've got the whole team together, and you start to see a lot of the same aspects that were brought out in that original 80s series being updated, but on completely new twist on what happened in the old story. In this second issue, we have the new team goes on their very first mission, and an African dictator is using mind control techniques to commit genocide. Now, old Squadron Supreme fans will seem a little bit familiar to hear about this this evil villain, because it does go back to a villain that was very prominent in the original series, and that's one of the reasons I think this new series is going to be really enjoyed by old fans of that original Squadron Supreme. But I think there's really an updated version. It's much more, I would say it's an extremely realistic, often personal, and always thought-provoking book at what it might really be like if the iconic superheroes that we all know were to exist in our real world. And I just love this book. It has not let me down yet. When it was Supreme Power, it was great, and then it went over to the same story continued in the Supreme Power Hyperion mini. And now this new Squadron Supreme series goes right off from that story. And I just think it's outstanding. And the art, for some reason, in this issue, Gary Frank's pencils really struck me as always thought it was good. But this one, with his subtlety, facial expressions, the moods that are brought out, just I really think he knocked the ball out of the park on this one. And I can't recommend this one enough. And from a guy, you know, I find that a lot of super these days, the old style stuff, and a lot of superheroes I'm not really into, but I find a book like this that really gives you something to think about while they're exploring the ideas of superheroes along with the 100 other ideas at the same time, and that's why I really like this book. So it's go out and get Issue 2 is out.
Well, anyone that's listened to the show before knows that I love this book. It's I actually did the first Squadron Supreme as a top of the stack a month or so ago, and I haven't read the second issue, but I thought the transition from the Supreme Power to Squadron Supreme was very good. Sal disagreed with me a little bit. I would also like to throw in the Nighthawk mini, which also bridged the gap in between the Max series and the Marvel series. Sal, have you continued to pick up Squadron Supreme?
I picked up the first one. I also have the second one. I haven't read the second one yet. And I still like it. I just think, for me, it lost a little bit of its edge that I enjoyed from the first series. And especially that Nighthawk series, if that didn't have some of the more mature themes and language and violence, I think, not that I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much, I just think the story would have suffered a bit because of it, and maybe I'm just, you know, too immature or something, but I just think that the issues that they're dealing with, specifically in that Nighthawk book, it's hard to tell something like that and take all those things out of it and still be, you know, realistic or gritty enough for my taste, at least.
Yeah, I think that Squadron Supreme is doing a fine job from the first issue. I didn't even notice that it was a Max title. They had the naked females and whatnot. They put them in costume, but the way that they did it made sense. And yeah, if it gives this book a broader audience, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
That's why they did it. So you know, you can't argue with that. I mean, everybody should certainly be able to enjoy it.
I think an interesting companion book to read with this, if you like Squadron Supreme, you should pick up American Way, because I think there's a lot of parallels between those two books.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sal, have you read American Way yet?
Yes, I did.
Do you see some parallels between the two of them?
You know, it's hard for me to draw those kind of things just because I really separate books in my own mind a lot.
The heroes, you know, it's like what they would be like in...
Well, certainly the government involvement, I mean, they're in both of those books, and sort of the behind-the-scenes look. I think I might actually be enjoying the American Way end of that a little bit more, because they're going a little bit more into sort of their marketing ploy with that group of heroes, as opposed to the pure control that the government is looking for out of Squadron Supreme.
Yeah, I love Squadron Supreme. So.
And I would say, also as a companion thing, they've got that old Squadron Supreme Grunewalds. Mm-hmm. I had only read a couple of issues back when it originally came out, and I have like maybe 3 issues of it, but now I'm rereading it now, and it gives you a whole other perspective of where this new series is coming from. And
I loved that when it first came out.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if you remember that story, or if you haven't read it, and read it, it'll really be a nice companion reading the new Squadron Supreme.
I love how it all originated. It's really what a spoof on the JLA, right?
Yeah.
I like Squadron Supreme better than any JLA story I've ever read. Okay, Mr. DC fan, what's your top of the stack?
Well, if you guys are done with the serious books, I'm going to pick one that's funny. It's a Superior Showcase from Ad House Comics. It's an anthology of 3 stories by different indie artists and writers, and it's $2.95, so that makes it 4 cents cheaper than most of like the big 2 books. And it does a great job of making fun of comic book superheroes and the sort of pretensions that we all have about them, which is funny. And the first story is a little hit and miss, but the middle one about the former mod from the 60s with metal arms I find to be quite clever. And the last one is a hilarious pastiche of Batman and Nightwing, which I think is really, really funny. And it also manages to make fun of hipsters, so... living in Chicago, I really appreciate any attack upon the people on the bus I see wearing women's jeans, even though they're men. So, that's the end of mine.
Who are the artists?
Oh, yeah, I should mention that, huh?
Art, you mean the art?
Nick Brazzi does the first story, Mike Dawson does the second. For the third one, it's Dean Tripp, or Trippy.
Tripp.
Tripp and John Campbell do the third one.
You said Bertozzi? Bertozzi did that?
Let me see that. Yeah, Bertozzi did that.
Those are some pretty good names.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. That sounds. I haven't read that, but...
I mean, it's not anything earth-shattering. It's got a few corny jokes in there, but there's some moments, especially in the last story by Tripp and Campbell, about jokes about Nightwing, especially one about a character that's playing Robin. Someone says, "Oh, are you dressed up as Night for Halloween?" And they're like, "Why?" And he's like, "Let's look generically upset about something." Which is sort of a, you know, it's pretty funny, and it's pretty clever, and for for 3 short stories, it's pretty funny. I enjoyed it. I was really pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, Tom. My top of the stack this week, I have to owe this one to to Mr. Wachter. He suggested that he's got about three books that he had suggested to me in the last couple weeks that I have absolutely loved. So I owe him for many, many hours of enjoyment recently. My top of the stack is Off-Road. It is written and drawn by Sean Murphy. It is published by Oni Press, and it's a trade paperback, and it comes in at $11.95, and it is worth every penny. Off-Road has appeal for a variety of readers, but if you are a guy, this book has some special meaning. Going home after you've moved on to the next phase of your life can be tough. There are high expectations, old ghosts, and the constant fear that you just don't fit into a place that you may have never fit into anyway. But for myself, there was always one constant when I traveled back to my hometown. My friends were always there to greet me and welcome me back into the fold. No matter how far away I had been or what new friends I had made, they were always there for me. Always have been, they always will be. Often the friends I thought I knew revealed new sides to themselves that gave me new respect for them. These important facets of life and personality were always buried in these silly politics of being a teenage boy. Off-Road brought me back to a time when road trips were around for the most of my life. It does what the title suggests, a path, and it forces the characters in the book to face their past, their futures, each other, and more importantly, themselves. Off-Road deals with some pretty heavy issues, spousal and child abuse, alcoholism, isolation, and it also deals with the horrible rednecks and bottle rocket. But that's what I loved about Off-Road. Teetered on the edge of being pretentious, but it never took itself too seriously. John Murphy moved the story from one confrontation to the next, but never forgot to entertain us and put a smile on our face. Off-Road is a fantastic story about buddies, beer, and skid plates. Take an afternoon to flip through the old high school yearbook and then read Off-Road. I bet you'll be on the phone talking to old friends by the end of the night. And Off-Road is my top of the stack.
Were you reading that?
Yes, I was. I know it sounds so bad, but I got so sick of top of the stack going, I read this book and it was cool.
But then something happened and this happened.
Yeah, and the art was kind of nice, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna write.
Did you just rip on the record?
You did write it yourself, though, right?
I did write it myself.
Okay.
Yes. So.
On sale from. Oh wait, they cut that part out.
Well, you know, Chris was kind enough to lend me Dave's copy of Off-Road, and I've read about three quarters of it, and it is a very funny, very touching, just entertaining book. I've enjoyed it so far, and I'll probably finish it tonight. Like you said, it deals with some serious topics, but it never takes itself very seriously, or at least too seriously. And the art in it is really good. I really enjoyed his style of art. I hadn't seen his work before, but very cool, different kind of style and entertaining.
Yeah. Dave will. I'm not hugging you, asshole. Great line in the book. If you like buddy movies and just fun books about guys going out and getting crazy and bonding together and just good guy fun, it is so good.
And if you're a woman, don't read it.
Yeah, you know, it's probably not a chick book, seriously.
Unless you enjoy seeing guys being stupid and reckless and, well, guys.
Yeah.
You probably pretty much know. Anyone that's dating a comic book fan is used to that type of stupid behavior.
it is a buddy book. Yeah, it's probably not.
I think if you like something like Swingers, the movie Swingers, I think that's right up the same kind of alley.
Here's an older movie, great movie by the way, but have you ever seen Fandango? Early Kevin Costner, Judd Hirsch, I think, was in that.
Sorry, Judd Hirsch just makes me laugh. I don't know.
Judd Hirsch, Judd Nelson, I get them confused.
Oh, okay, that totally makes more sense. Which one? I think you're thinking Judd Nelson.
Judd Nelson, okay.
Judd Hirsch. Well, Judd Reinhold or something?
Judge
Reinhold. I'm sorry, you're right.
My name is Judge.
Judge.
Well, if you like Off-Road, watch Fandango. If you like Fandango, read Off-Road, because they're both about groups of friends that are moving on into different phases of their life, and they kind of take this like last road trip, and it reveals all these different layers of their personalities. And there's the two guys that really, you know, bond in this, and you know, it's like a Vietnam era, and two of the four friends have been drafted into the military, and they're getting ready to go out to Vietnam.
Ah, you're spoiling it for me.
Okay.
I haven't even gotten to that point yet.
May I suggest watching Red Dawn?
No, that's Fandango.
Oh, good God. I thought you were talking about Off-Road.
Away.
What? When did that happen? I don't remember reading anything about Vietnam.
No, it's a modern-day deal, but he does get drafted to Vietnam.
check out Off-Road. That is our top of the stack.
Hey, one second. I just wanted to, couple of things, go back to my top of the stack, if that's okay. I just wanted to mention, I looked up that artist and that painting. It was Nicholas Poussin, and the painting is The Shepherds of Arcadia. And if you start looking up the history of that painting while reading this book, you'll get a much better understanding of what's going on with this story, because there's a lot of controversy about that painting and blah, blah, blah. That, and I did want to read this... this quote on the back of the book by Brian K. Vaughan. He said, "Truly original ideas are worth their weight in gold, but a truly original idea executed with as much intelligence and obvious passion as Rex Mundy is priceless. A top-of-the-stack comic month after month." Well, Brian, I just wanted to let you know that's a copyrighted phrase, and you owe me Why the Last Man.
I also have something to add about my book. It is a color cover. So... black and white book. I just want to make that 100% clear to everyone.
It's not a pencil variant color?
Not until the second printing.
Oh. It was so great. Whenever I, you know, I love this Rex Mundy book, and I let Sal borrow it. Like, the next day he comes in and he's like, "Oh man, that was really great. You know, I got on the internet and I started researching all this stuff, and I read this book about Renaissance paintings and conspiracy theories," and I'm just like, "Man, you really did like that book."
Wow. Is there any way to get any product placement into Rex Mundy?
Well,
What kind of product?
Wine.
Sort of
like absinthe ads.
Absinthe, yeah. There's probably, well, they have full newspaper articles at the end of every chapter, so you could easily pop, you know, some ancient torture devices or something. Well, the weird thing is this, you know, it's hard to tell when this book is supposed to be.
France, 1933.
Yeah, never mind. It says it says it on the first page.
No.
Never mind.
But it is an alternate reality Europe. So yeah, read Rex Mundy. It is so good. Okay, now are we done?
Yeah, sorry.
Speed.
Okay, that will complete our top of the stack for the week. That brings us to some announcements. Mr. Salazar, what do you got for us in the way of announcements?
A couple of things. I just wanted to let everybody know about the website. I've done some changes over the last couple of weeks. Added some stuff. I talked about the news feeds already. There's also a submission or submit button on the menu. If you would like to submit reviews or news articles, or if you're a creator that has a preview coming out, you can go on there and submit it, and we'll take a look at it. And if it's up to the high standard of Around Comics, in other words, if every
we'll
other word
anything.
Is misspelled, yeah, we'll put it up on the site. So, you know, if you have stuff to contribute, feel free to go on the site and do that. We also have, because of some problems with the forum that we were having, the Comic Book Geek Speak forum has been having some issues, server issues lately, so we put our own forum up on the site now, so come there and check it out, and post away and tell us how much you love me and hate Chris. And other than that, I think that was about it on the website. There's some other things. We're always looking for advertisers. We have now advertising space available if anyone want to advertise on the site. Coca-Cola or, you know, Nike. We're more than happy to, you know, sell you banner space, that kind of thing.
I urge you, if you enjoy the Iran Comics website, to let Chris and Sal know how much you don't want product placement.
And this episode was brought to you by
Tower Comics. I think on the forum that Brian Deemer and the guys were switching over to a new server, so I believe that the forum is going to be back up and running by the time that this episode gets out. But I think that we do.
It's supposed to be on Thursday.
Yeah, like Thursday, because they're at the Pittsburgh Comic Con right now.
Okay.
So he's not going to be able to fix it till he gets back, and the whole reason is because they had a huge spike in.
Thanks, Bendis Bay.
Let's hope he never finds out about us, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so when this episode does drop, come by Rona Comics and check out the forum. I've got a couple announcements here. First of all, we would love it if you vote for us at Podcast Alley. David Price was kind enough to start a thread on the forum about that, so you can go and click on that. What I would prefer is, go vote at Podcast Alley. That's great. But what I prefer is tell a friend about the show. If you're at the local comic shop, if you're talking to your comic buddies, tell them about Around Comics. We would love for you to do that and have them listen in. Here's a reminder to check out some of our podcast brethren. We love Bruce Rosenberg over at Comic Cast. He does a great job. Collected Comics Library. Chris Marshall, week in, week out, does a wonderful job of running down all of the collected editions, trades, omnibuses, masterworks, anything that is a collected edition. Chris is got the scoop. Geek Speak. Ian Levenstein was kind enough to have me on a Geek Speak episode about a week ago, so go check him out. Ian is a great guy and runs a very good podcast. The Pop Cult Online by our friend Rick Gordon, or Maximum Glory as we like to call him. Indie Spinner Rack. This is such a great podcast. Even if you don't read indie books, this is 45 minutes to an hour of just split your gut funny. Charlie and Mr. Phil are great guys and very entertaining. And of course we love Comic Geek Speak and I Read Comics. So please go check out all of our friends there. Visit our website for forums, reviews, news, and contact. And Sal, we've got a contest coming up, our first Around Comics contest. Do you want to run that down for folks?
Sure. We're going to do a contest where you can... Uh-oh. My dogs are barking. And that's not a
Southern
sound.
Wrestle Tom to the ground.
You just did that to rip off Comic Geek Speak, didn't you?
I don't know. I don't listen to other podcasts. Anyway, we're gonna do a contest, and I don't know that we have the prize figured out quite yet. At the very least, it's gonna be probably a trade of your choice that's available now, not some out of print weird variant stuff.
Miracle Man.
But the contest, I think we're gonna do it in May, and what were we gonna do again? I forgot.
Give us a topic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, we talked about a couple of different ones, but send in a topic for the show. You can email it. You can send us a recorded audio email if you want that you would like us to do on the show, and we'll pick a winner and pick the best one and talk and use that topic and give you some nice prizes.
Yeah, tell us why you want to use that topic. Give us some meat in the email. So send that. I would love some audio emails that we could play on the show and see what the listeners think. So I think this will be fun. And who knows, you might even get to a guest spot on the show.
Hey, One more thing. I wanted to tell everybody to look for me in the latest issue of Daredevil, and that's my story. I'm sticking to it. My good friend Ed Brubaker was kind enough to write me in as a guard in the prison in the latest issue of Daredevil. Just and until he tells me otherwise, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
we'll have to talk to Ed at the next Wizard World Chicago. Which, speaking of, get ready for Wizard World Chicago. It is August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. We are going to be there. Let us know if you're coming. We are going to have a dandy time there. And we'll be there in force and recording lots and lots of shows.
And everybody that buys us a drink will get a nice 8x10 glossy of Tom.
You'll get better than that. You'll get to hear me ramble on while drunk about something you care about.
If you like him sober, folks.
Just like how in Chicago gets to enjoy that all the time. And hear me just basically yell at you.
All right, guys. I think that we have had a fun freewheeling time today. I would like to thank Tom and Dave and Sal, as always, for all the hard work that he does. This has been another episode of Around Comics. Have a great week, and remember, check us out again next Monday. You guys, have a good one.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.